the world player of the century. Football great Pelé has died, leaving an unprecedented legacy and having inspired millions worldwide. As football is the most popular sport in the world, how will he be remembered? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. The king of football, that's what Brazilians called him. They're observing 3 days of mourning after Pelé died on Thursday following a long battle with cancer. The 82-year-old played a crucial role as football rose to become the most popular sport on the planet. Pelé played in 4 World Cups and was the only player in history to win 3. But his legacy stretched far beyond his hall of trophies and a record of remarkable goal scoring. As a black man, Pelé rose to the status of national treasure in a country with a deep history of slavery and legacy of segregation that persists. He won fans across all continents of the world. Pelé will be laid to rest in his adopted hometown of Santos, as Monica Yanakiev reports.
Pelé's museum in Santos has never been so full since people heard the news that he had died on Thursday. Crowds have been gathering here, 600 people per hour, the museum says, to see the legacy and the history of this man that has become a legend not only in football. Now, Santos itself is preparing itself to pay a last tribute to Pelé. His body will be brought over here in the early hours of Monday. There will be a 24-hour wake at the Santos Stadium, where he played for so many years, and the public will go and visit them. We spoke earlier to his barber, who told us that he was expecting to go there to say goodbye to Edson Arantes, not to Pelé, because, according to him, Pelé will live on forever. After the wake on Tuesday, there will be a funeral. It will be a closed ceremony for the family. Pelé had already decided where he wanted to be buried. He had acquired a space on the 9th floor of a vertical cemetery overlooking the Santos Stadium that he loved so much.
Pelé's global fame was cemented by the tours he went on with his Santos team throughout his career. He's fondly remembered in Africa. In Nigeria, it's long been claimed that his arrival in 1969 resulted in a 48-hour ceasefire in an ongoing civil war.
Pelé was actually bigger than football itself. He was like a world leader. As a child, he gave you hope. I mean, you knew how he started playing football without boots. And then he took Brazil to the World Cup and so many other things.
I think watching him play even would make you love football. If at all you're a hater of football, you only see Pelé playing, you don't fall in love with football, because Pelé rebranded football. He gave football a new name.
Pelé spent most of his career with Santos in his homeland, despite big money offers from Europe. He began a career of relentless goal scoring at the age of 15. By 17, Pelé was a World Cup winner. He would inspire Brazil to 2 more triumphs in 1962 and 1970. By the end of it all, he'd scored nearly 1,300 goals. That's recognized as a Guinness World Record, although disputed by many because it includes friendly matches. But Pelé was remembered for a life that extended beyond the football field. He became a symbol of hope and inspiration to countless people. While seemingly exempt from criticism on the pitch, Pelé faced much for his closeness to authoritarian figures. From 1995 to 1999, Pelé went on to become Minister for Sports and once hoped to become president. For more on all this, I'm joined by our guests. In Madrid is Fernando Calas, Brazilian sports journalist for Reuters. Fernando has covered 3 World Cups. In Leeds is James Varley. He's a communications consultant and founder of Varley Media. James is the grandson of British news photographer John Varley, who took the famous shot of Pelé and Bobby Moore at the 1970 FIFA World Cup. And in Marseille is Maher Mizahi, football journalist covering Africa. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today. Fernando, let me start with you today. Pelé, of course, wasn't just the symbol of a sport. He was also the symbol of a country. Tell us about how important he is to Brazil and to Brazilians, and about the depth of sadness that Brazilians feel over his death.
Well, there was one Brazil before and after Pelé. He's the main reason why Brazil was worldwide famous, because he and Muhammad Ali, they were the two biggest sports stars in their area. You know, he was the first global superstar, and it was so important for our country, you know, for building our identity. You know, our identity is directly connected with music and with football, and most of it because of Pelé. So he was a genius inside the pitch. He was a great, gracious, you know, genius, because he was always smiling, always treating people so well. He was an ambassador of Brazil all over the world. He is the, you know, like, never four letters were so meaningful and so important and so well recognized that his face is until today, it's well known wherever he, you know, you see the photo of Pelé.
Maher, I saw you reacting, smiling along with a lot of what Fernando was saying there. And he was talking about the fact that Pelé really became an ambassador all around the world. Of course, you know, he transcended the game. You posted a thread on Twitter in which you talked about Pelé in Africa, and you said that he was always revered there for what he represented. What did Pelé come to represent in Africa?
Before I touch on that, let me just piggyback on some of what Fernando was saying.
Yeah, go ahead.
Gracious, smiling, connecting with people, the people's champion, you know, and he's right to liken him to Muhammad Ali. And that's because when Pelé was emerging, you know, in the late 1950s, the early 1960s, it was really coinciding with the democratization of television across the world and the first, you know, live televised World Cups. And so he really coincided with the beginning of the television era. And that's why, one of the reasons why he was shot all of a sudden into, you know, people's living rooms in Africa and Asia and South America and North America. And he's young, he's black, he's brash, he's playful, he's unapologetic. I think that's what a lot of Africans were drawn to. They loved that about him. You know, they loved the symbol of what Pelé represented. And so, as at the same time on our continent in Africa, for example, there were many decolonization and independence movements around the same time in the late 1950s and the early 1960s. And what a lot of these countries did is they were looking for ways to legitimize themselves. How can we, you know, really prove that we're an independent country that's worthy of being respected? One of the things they do is they invite celebrities over. And Pelé was so gracious, again, to use Fernando's word, when he traveled all over the place. He traveled to Algeria, Morocco, Egypt, Mozambique, Senegal, Ghana, Nigeria, all over the place, always willing to take pictures of people, shaking hands with some of the greatest leaders, but also smiling with the children. And I think that's why he was so beloved in Africa.
James, you know, we spoke when we introduced you about this personal connection that your family has with Pelé, more specifically this iconic photograph that your grandfather took of Pelé and England football hero Bobby Moore swapping shirts and smiling at each other during the 1970 World Cup. Tell us about what this photo has come to symbolize and why it's so important.
I think it's come to symbolize a heck of a lot, especially in the sporting sphere. I think it symbolizes sportsmanship, mutual respect between the two players. The guys there talked about Pelé not only just being a great footballer, but a great humanitarian. And I think that really comes across in this photograph. There is so much. I think there's so much symbolism in this shot. It's Pelé, the greatest player of all time, Bobby Moore, arguably one of the greatest defenders of all time. You've got England, which, of course, back here we like to call the home of football, and Brazil, probably the greatest and most successful football nation. And Pelé himself said about the photograph that he thought it was very important. It had gone around the world because it showcases respect and sportsmanship, and these are the values that you need to pass to the next generation of players. And I think Pelé was the perfect exponent of that. He passed sportsmanship and, you know, being gracious and being a great humanitarian onto the next generation. I think that's why he's so beloved around the world.
Fernando, you were talking before about the great significance of Pelé and all that he symbolizes in Brazil and around the world. I want to talk about one specific component of that, the fact that here's a black football player from a very poor background in Brazil becoming such a huge success. What did that mean to a country like Brazil, where there's been so much racism, so much classism? What did it mean for the marginalized communities there? And also, what kind of discrimination did Pelé face when he was coming up in the sport?
I think that it's amazing how Maher talk about his impact in Africa, because we are talking about a 17-year-old kid from a very impoverished childhood, a black man that became the face of sports all over the world. And it's and in a time that most of black Africa, most of Africa, it was under colonization still, you know. So it's it was so important what he meant for many of the, you know, like the black people in Brazil, that from the African diaspora, you know, because it was the first time that ethnic minorities saw one of their own, you know, like being this very successful person by his own terms. So it was the symbol of Pelé for, you know, like being a black man and being the face of sports all over the world. It's so remarkable because people just, you know, like starting to relate because of him, you know. And it was the message that he sent, you know, like being this gracious man. There was a genius inside the pitch, but it was also, you know, like this he was a beast inside the pitch. He was the most powerful and at the same time the most technical and most dominating player in the pitch. So the message that he sent, you know, it was so important, not only for Brazil, but for black people and for ethnic minorities all over the world. So I think that's very important, you know, because it was a time that even, you know, like people were starting to realize what racism was, you know. There wasn't this really like today, you know. I think it's very easy to, maybe I see a lot of people like judging, you know, like and criticizing Pelé by 21st century standards, you know, in a time that it was completely different than today. I think that Pelé being a symbol, there wasn't a thing about Brazil in the 50s. There was really important. There was a lot of racism inside football in Brazil because the black players, they were always referred for being lazy, not emotionally stable. Pelé and Garrincha, these two guys over here, they started on the bench on 1958, and then they became two of the best players in the world, you know, at that time. So all of because of Barbosa, there was the Brazilian goalkeeper, there was a black player, and he made a mistake on the 1950 World Cup where Brazil lost in Maracanã, you know. So it was so important against races at that time because Brazil was the first team in sports, there was a multicultural team that was successful all over the world. So the message was so important at that time.
Maher, we're talking right now in this part of the discussion about, you know, issues of racism, how Pelé dealt with that. You know, the fact is that he didn't talk much about racism throughout his career, and he was criticized for that, as Fernando was saying. Why didn't he speak about it more? And how disappointing was that to his fans around the world?
Look, to be completely honest, I don't think, you know, the fans back in Algeria or back in Zambia even understood Portuguese at the time to listen to interviews he was giving, you know, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you know, what his positions were with, you know, junta governments or with other politicians. I think when it comes to figures like this, people sort of divorce the symbol and the man, and they tend not to judge the man because they don't, first of all, they don't know what he's saying. They don't know what anything about Brazilian politics. They don't know anything about that. But what they do know is what they see on the television set. Again, they see, like we've been saying, you know, this young, black, playful, unapologetic, brilliant footballer that they can relate to and who's willing to take time out of his day to come and visit them. I know he was being paid on these trips. But just let's take for a moment and let's compare, you know, Pelé, Muhammad Ali, and the stars of the 1960s to some of the modern superstars that we have today. Think about Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi coming and doing a tour of Africa and, you know, spending, you know, weeks on end meeting people and shaking hands. It's just these stars today are so inaccessible. They've become conglomerates. They become businesses in and of themselves. They don't have personalities anymore. And that's not a criticism because it's unfair to expect people to act like Pelé and Ali and the stars of the 1960s and 70s because they didn't even have their own personal lives after. They belonged to the world. And that's what I think you're seeing celebrated now is that people from Africa, from Asia, people like James, Everybody has a personal story of that time they met Pelé, or that time their uncle's friend met Pelé and what he said. And some of these stories are true and some of these stories aren't true, but that doesn't even matter. What matters is that people want to know him. That's why some of these stories are made up. They want to know him. They want to, you know, make up and invent, you know, stories that he might have said or might not have said. Mm. And that's just an expression of love. People loved him because of what he represented.
James, Pelé, of course, was an incredible athlete. He was so praised for his creativity, for his improvisation on the pitch. He was seen as an innovator, wasn't he? I mean, how did his style of play change the game?
I think the great thing about Pelé, when you look at the stats, when you look at his stats, it's just incredible. The number of goals he scored, the number of assists that he scored. But the thing that stands out for me is that he did everything on a football pitch, and he did it brilliantly. Left foot, right foot, he was great in the air. He could run at people. And also as well, you look at the old footage of the way that he kicked the ball, even, because it was different back then. You know, the pitches weren't as good. The football was a lot heavier. And to see him being this incredible figure back in the late 50s and the 60s, you look on some of the old footage and it looks like he's playing a different game compared to the rest of the other players at that time. And that for me is why, you know, I've always considered him to be the greatest. He's the all round greatest player. You know, my grandfather, who was, you know, lucky enough to see him in action a number of times, and he covered a heck of a lot of football over his career. He said there was only one player that stood out for him, and it was Pelé. I think, you know, players like that take the game to a new level and are way ahead of their time. And I think Pelé would have been the greatest in any era. And he took the game to a different level that, you know, we've never really seen since. I don't think there's a player... Even Messi or Ronaldo now, I don't think there's a player that compares to him that can do everything absolutely brilliantly.
Fernando, Pelé played for 2.5 seasons, I believe, in the 1970s for the New York Cosmos. How much did he help popularize football in the United States, in a country where it wasn't all that popular? And did that change U.S. sports history? Because a lot of people draw a direct line between Pelé coming to the U.S. and then the U.S. ultimately hosting the World Cup in the 90s.
Yeah, for sure. He was the main reason that football today is a big deal in the United States and in the entire North America because of New York Cosmos, you know, because of him being Pelé at that time, thinking about, you know, and this story is amazing, you know. The thing is that he was thinking about retirement, and then he got to know that he lost all his money because of bad financial advisors, you know. So he had to find a way to make all money again, you know. It was crazy to think about that, you know, like after, I don't know, 20 years of his career, that he was broke, actually. So he went to the United States, and then he created this huge legacy that people all, you know, until today, they reverence him, you know. And I think that the thing about Pelé, you know, today a friend was sent me a link from this friendly game from 1990 that I completely forgot. And we all saw it live in Brazil because it's such a big deal. Pelé played in this team, it was a Brazilian team against the rest of the world team. Marco van Basten was playing, a lot of, you know, like these great footballers were playing. In Pelé in 1990, he looked like he could play, you know, and then we just knew that he offered himself with 45 years old to play for Brazil in the 1986 World Cup. So he was this like huge athlete. I saw this article in the New York Times this week, you know, calling him the football big bang. And I thought that it was brilliant because, you know, sports, they evolve constantly, you know. I think it's unfair to compare players from today, from 50 years ago, because it's a completely different game. But they evolve constantly, but they have to start somewhere. You know, and I think that when you see the final of the World Cup with Mbappe, the new generation, being compared to Messi, the end of his generation, and they are both being compared to Pelé, you know. So Pelé is the mold, you know. Pelé is the reference until today of what a footballer needs to be. And we are talking about a player from, I don't know, 70 years ago. So I think it's just remarkable how Pelé is this, the big bang of football. You know, he's the reference until today. He's the mold until today. And I think that that in itself is just remarkable, because we are talking about today in the 21st century, these guys, they're just this supreme athletes. No, so I think that that's one of the most amazing things about Pelé. Until today, he's still the reference of what a footballer needs to be.
Maher, I saw you reacting quite a bit to what Fernando was saying there, so I'm going to give you a chance to jump in. I just wanted to ask you, I mean, Pelé really believed in the power of football to connect people across racial, societal, national lines, and he was really able to do that, wasn't he?
He said when he went on the on that first African tour in the 1960s that it changed him, but it also changed the world saw him. It also changed the way the world saw him. And he really transformed these countries when he went there. So, I mean, there are just so many legends I can tell you about, like, his time in Africa. It's said, again, this is from 1967 to 1970, there was the Nigerian Civil War between, you know, Biafra that was trying to proclaim an independent republic. It was said that when Pelé arrived in Nigeria and played a match in Lagos against the Nigerian national team, there was a 48-hour ceasefire. Now, in his 2006 autobiography, he said, I'm not really sure that it's true, but what is for sure is that the whole country shut down to watch Pelé play. And in 1965 in Algeria, they were programmed to play two matches, one on the 17th of June and one on the 20th of June in 1965. They played the first match on the 17th of June in Oran. And when they were going to play the second match in the capital of Algiers, there was a coup d'etat. And the minister of defense that carried out the coup d'etat did it because the whole country was shut down, focusing on a football match, and he knew he could overtake the government. I mean, really, when you talk about being a hero of the people mm-hmm. all over the place, they would. I mean, it was rare in the 1950s and 60s to get 60, 70, 80,000 people in a stadium. And he was doing that consistently all over the world, not just in Brazil, not just in Europe, everywhere.
James, even during the World Cup here in Doha, when news was hitting that Pelé was in hospice care and that perhaps he was nearing the end of his life, people were expressing so much concern. I mean, he's not just considered one of the greatest football players of all time. He's considered one of the greatest athletes of all time, right?
Absolutely, yeah. No, yeah, great footballer, great athlete, and like I said before, great humanitarian. And just going back to a few of the points that were raised there about, you know, the power of football, really, and Pelé appreciating the power of football and the power that he had as the greatest footballer on the planet. You know, we saw during Qatar 2022 in Doha, football is the greatest unifying tool in the world. It brings people together. And like I said before, it's 11 versus 11 on the pitch. It doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter your culture, your religion, your background, how much money you have. It's a level playing field. And I think Pelé extolled those virtues better than anybody else in the world. You know, we've, like I said, you know, going back to Qatar 2022 again, it was about, you know, bridging the gap between East and West, you know, uniting cultures. And I think Pelé was the human embodiment of that. And I think that's, you know, one of the reasons why there's such an outpouring of grief now and, you know, such concern during the tournament. And yeah, he's just, I think the reaction to his death just shows what he means to people across the world and to people from every single culture, every single religion and background. It's wonderful to see the outpouring of grief.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the discussion there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Fernando Callas, James Varley, and Maher Mezahi. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.